Welcome to A Legacy of Faith, the podcast designed to help your family survive the day, plan for tomorrow, and always keep an eye on eternity. We're glad you joined us for the latest episode of the program, and if you hear just a little bit of what we're just going to refer to as ambient noise in the background, it's because we're recording this episode at Polishing the Pulpit in the Exhibit Hall area, and we are grateful to the Light Network for them allowing us to use their equipment to record a podcast here. They gave us that invitation a few weeks ago, and we jumped on it because, frankly, they have better equipment than we do. No, but because they're just good friends of ours, appreciate Robert Hatfield. He's actually doing the actual recording right now and just allowing me to talk and to interview a good friend and someone we're glad to have with us. And we are pleased on this episode to be joined by Rob Whitaker. Rob, welcome to the program.
Adam, thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here.
When the Light Network asked if we'd be willing, or if we'd like to, I should say, to use their equipment to record, at first I kind of said, I'm not sure. And then I thought, wait a minute. Rob Whitaker's going to be at Polishing the Pulpit, and if we can possibly get him between any of his 815 sessions that he speaks at or attends here, I would like to have him on the program, and you graciously agreed, and we really appreciate it, because I know you have been extremely busy the last few days.
It has been exciting to see the crowds, that the interest level for evangelism has been overwhelming. I never would have expected the ballrooms to be as full as they are, standing room only. It's encouraging because it shows that there is still an interest in personal evangelism. And it seems that the greatest need today is not the motivation to do it. It is the know-how to do it.
Yeah.
That the people just don't know what to do, and they're thirsting for that information.
Right. And he's mentioning the ballrooms here at Polishing the Pulpit. There are four of the actual ballrooms. I think each one seats like 500, 600, somewhere in that range.
Yes.
And every session I've been to, if it hasn't been full, it's been very, very close. There are, this year at 2016 PTP, what did they say, 4,100 people registered?
Yes.
I remember the first year we came, they're excited they crossed 2,000. So this has been just amazing to watch the last, I guess we've been coming 6 years now, the growth of this. But Rob, before we jump into the topic today, take just a minute for those who don't know you to kind of introduce yourself, your family, where you're from, and then we'll jump into our topic in a couple of minutes.
Sure. We've been at the Willette Church of Christ. We're just outside of Red Boiling Springs. My wife, Nicole, my daughter, Hannah, my son, Jared, for just almost 10 years. It's a very rural setting. I like to tell people, if you come to Willette, you're coming there for a purpose. No one accidentally arrives at Willette. I say when your cell phone turns off, your GPS goes blank, you're pretty close to Willette. We're an hour from anywhere, but yet it's a congregation of 335 people. And we're growing, and that's in large part due to personal evangelism. No one moves to Willette. Industry's not going to bring you to Willette. And so at the most, we can just survive with birth rates and death rates.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to grow, it's really personal evangelism that's causing that. And so that's our love and our interest is in that area, and I'm grateful to be here to talk about it.
Well, I appreciate that. I had the privilege of speaking at Willette, I guess about 5 years ago now, and I remember what you're talking about. So I remember getting lost getting there, and you had a wonderful song leader who I think had to lead about three extra songs while we finally got there. About 10 minutes late, but enjoyed the time there. But as you said, it's a congregation well over 300, and I don't mean any disrespect by this. It's one of those places you describe as being in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And those of us from the outside look in and think, how does this happen? You know, are they growing people in the cornfields? And I don't say in any disrespect whatsoever, but it's because, as you said, there is a fervor, an excitement about just reaching people for Christ, personal evangelism. And what we're going to talk about today in a few moments is personal evangelism sort of in a rural setting. The town where I live is barely over 4,000 people. The area is maybe 7,000. And sometimes we live in those small towns or small communities, and we use that as a crutch and say, well, there's not many people, so why try? But before we get there, let's just set the boundaries here and say this is something for every Christian. Personal evangelism is not optional. So kind of go through just that foundational thing, then we'll get to the specific topic.
Sure. And, you know, when we think about personal evangelism, sometimes we think of preachers, elders, and deacons. And if those are the only people doing personal evangelism in your local congregation, it's not enough. The Great Commission was given to everybody. Jesus said, go ye therefore and teach all nations. And that was given to every Christian. One of the things I like to do is demonstrate in personal evangelism how brand new converts, they can teach people. In fact, sometimes brand new converts are more effective because they know people that we don't know. They're bridges to folks, family members and friends. And it's really exciting when a new convert comes up and says, can you give me some of those booklets? I'm going to go sit down with one of my friends and study the gospel. And I make this point in a seminar that I do on personal evangelism. If new converts can be studying with people, why aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
We've been sitting in the pews for 10, 20, 30 years. We know a whole lot more gospel, but they're studying with people.
Right. And it's interesting, too. We talk about how new converts, you know, they have that fire and the excitement. And it's easy to say this, and I understand that, but you wonder, why don't all of us still have that fire? And there is a motivation as soon as someone, as we say, comes up out of the waters of baptism. But that excitement or that motivation shouldn't die down much over time. But too often, frankly, it just does. And you've done some study, some look at simply Churches of Christ in America, you know, where we stand as far as numbers and so forth. And obviously, for those who listen who may not be a member of the Churches of Christ, we don't have a headquarters, so all this is done through, you know, through different kinds of research. But it's kind of frightening, frankly, to see where nationally we stand as far as, it's not even growth, it's decrease.
It is, and it's not an exact science. There's a book called Where the Saints Meet,
right,
and they put it out, and what they try to do is ask each congregation, you know, how many adherents, how many members do you have, and there's a count made, how many congregations exist in the United States. Let me run through those numbers real quick. In the year 2000, we had 1,265,142 members recorded. 9 years later, 2009, 1,224,404. In 2015, that number shrunk to 1,180,000. Now, regardless of how you define the faithfulness of these congregations, there's one point that has to be made. We're going in the wrong direction, and we're not growing. And if you go even further into the numbers and just look at the number of Churches of Christ, the number of congregations, in the year 2000, there were 13,155. In the year 2009, 12,629. In the year 2015, we had 12,300 congregations. Now, I had someone tell me recently that, well, that's because churches are consolidating. Well, that's not a good sign. They're consolidating because they're shrinking. And if they were growing, we wouldn't be consolidating. We'd be having more congregations.
That's right. And I've heard people say, and this is, you want to weep when you hear people say this, when they see especially the number of members that have declined. I've heard them say, well, other religious groups are declining at a faster rate. And I want to say, so what? We're still going in the wrong direction.
Absolutely.
Declining is not the option here.
No, it's not. In fact, I made a statement at Willette just several weeks ago. I said, brethren, if we're relying upon birth rates to maintain, all we're going to do at the best is maintain, and most churches won't even maintain.
No.
And so if there's not evangelism going on, you're probably going to begin decreasing. It is the solution to every problem we face right now in America.
Yes.
Every problem we're facing morally, and every problem we're facing, every fear in the church can be corrected with personal evangelism.
Those of you who are listening, can you tell he's excited about this? I love seeing Brother Rob talk about this. And this has led you to create a seminar, a DVD series as well, that goes along with that seminar. You've been presenting it basically here at Polishing the Pulpit, but it's also available in DVD. We usually kind of do the promos at the end. I'm going to let you go ahead and mention that now, and then we'll get to our specific topics. Talk about kind of the what you've been doing here at PTP and the DVDs, and then we'll get to our topic specifically.
Sure, Adam. There's an interesting history to this personal evangelism seminar. I never sought out to do a personal evangelism seminar. About 5 years ago, one of the directors, Brother Alan Webster, he called and he said, Rob, he said, I've heard of the growth, the evangelism. He said, would you come and speak on that topic at Polishing the Pulpit? Tell us, what are you doing? What's going on at Willette that's causing that growth? And so I said, I'd be glad to. So I put a lesson together and I called it, Let's Get Motivated. And all I did is just relay accounts of evangelism, personal accounts, real stories, people who actually had obeyed the gospel. I gave their names. I told them about their past, how they became Christians, and it just caught fire. The people just loved it, and so he called me back or emailed and said, let's do another one. And so from that first one, we've developed a series of five lessons. And so this DVD is composed of all five lessons. This spring, Brother Rudy Kane at the World Video Bible Schools, Maxwell, Texas, they do a lot of recording, a lot of videoing, very quality work. He said, come and present the seminar. He said, we need some training in Churches of Christ for evangelism. I'm reminded of 2 Timothy 2:2, which states, the things that you have heard among me, among many witnesses, the same commit thou unto faithful men who shall teach others also. You know, Adam, every school of preaching has that verse somewhere on their wall because that's the motto for schools of preaching. We want to train others to train others, but we're not doing a good job training people to be personal workers in local churches.
Right.
And I wish we would spend as much effort training preachers. I commend those who are training preachers, but let's train personal workers.
Right.
So this DVD, this came together as a how-to. How do I become a personal worker? This is not trying to sell a method. We're not trying to say one method is better than another. Now, I've got a method, and if you don't have one, I'll explain how I do it. But what we want people to do is get busy, get involved. How do you get into a Bible study? How do you take someone who visits, and they really have no inclination to study, how do you get them into that study and want to study?
That's great. And in the show notes for this episode, we'll link to Rural Video Bible School itself, because we want people to know about their work in general, but we will make sure to link specifically to the DVD, the seminar that is available through them. So we'll link to both of those in the show notes for the episode. But I asked you to come on this episode this week to talk about personal evangelism, obviously, but to think about it in kind of a small town, rural setting. And I wanted to do that for a couple of reasons. One, frankly, it's a little selfish.
Sure.
Because I live
sure.
in a small town.
Sure.
But also because sometimes we only hear from people in big cities, big congregations, and we have to kind of reverse engineer to a different setting. And I wanted to kind of do the opposite. I want us to think about kind of the smaller setting, and folks who may be listening to this in, you know, larger cities can say, you know, there's still something there for us in Nashville, Birmingham, St. Louis, wherever. And we have people listening all over the country in different settings. So let's just think about this kind of pluses, minuses, advantages, disadvantages. What would you say are some of the, let's just start on the negative, end with the positive. How about that? What are some of what people could say are disadvantages of living in a smaller town, a rural town, as it pertains to personal evangelism?
Well, one of the disadvantages is going to be the amount of people that you have. You don't have a constant influx of fresh faces. And so families are larger, they're more connected, and it seems that people are more tight. And so it's very difficult to break into those settings. When you're in a rural congregation, it's going to take time to gain the trust of people. And so when you're in a city congregation, you have an influx of people. They're moving in for industry purposes. Mm-hmm. But there's a word I like to use to describe the difference in growth when you're in a city congregation or any congregation, and that growth is coming from people moving in. They're already Christians. They're swelling.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with swelling. You know, if a Christian comes in and they're faithful, we want them worshiping with us.
Let me cut you off.
Yes, go ahead.
Just mention that, because I have heard people kind of downplay swelling. But at least those people are going to a faithful congregation.
Absolutely.
So we don't
Absolutely.
Need to downplay. If they are moving from wherever, Memphis to Nashville, and they go from one congregation to another, they're remaining faithful to the
yes.
Lord. So, but anyway, I just want to mention that, because that's a kind of a pet peeve of mine.
Yes, well, and I agree with that. It's not a negative thing to swell, but what I want to point out is that what we really want to point towards for good growth is not swelling, but we want to evangelize.
Right.
We want to grow by planting the seed, and God gives the increase. One of the things that I like to point out in one of the lessons in the seminar is a text in Genesis 2:18, and we're going to go a different direction with it. It says, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone, for I will make him a helpmeet for him." We are social creatures, Adam.
Right.
God created us to be interactive people. Sometimes as Christians in rural areas, we have a tendency to be in rural areas because we want to become islands. We want to get away from people. And in fact, in the culture we live in, there are people I know right now who've moved into our area. And when they move in, you're scratching your head, why did you come here? There's nothing here. Of course, there's farming and there's agriculture. Why did you move here? I moved here to get away from people.
Yes.
I moved here because I feel safer. Well, I understand there's a need to insulate ourselves from sin, but we cannot isolate ourselves from the sinner, or we will not be evangelistic. So in rural areas, sometimes there's a urge for people not to be social. We have to be social people if we're going to be effective evangelists.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that we need to do in evangelism, give you a positive thing of a rural area,
sure.
is that we need to get people in our homes again. And rural area people understand that.
That's right.
They still remember grandma making dinner and inviting the preacher and visitors over on Sunday for supper. And so one of the things that we do is that we want people in our home. We ask visitors, would you come? We'll have a dinner, and we make it a family event.
Mm-hmm.
My wife cooks, Nicole, my daughter Hannah, she cooks desserts. Jared helps me clean up. And what we want to do is just talk to them. And more than just talk, we want to listen to them.
Yeah.
Listening is important. So I talk until I find a sweet spot. When I find that sweet spot, I'm quiet, and I just let them talk and tell me about their job, their hobbies, their families. And it's amazing, Adam, how quickly, when you have someone in your home, they warm up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a reason for that. It's because we live in a digitally social world. Most people's social interaction is through Facebook, Twitter. It's through some type of social media, which means that when you give a warm-blooded person a warm, hot meal, They're so excited, they don't know what to do with themselves. And they immediately start talking. And there'd be people talking about problems they're having in their marriages, family, children. And they just met you 30 minutes ago.
Right.
Because they've never had this setting. In fact, one lady told me, we had her in our home. She said, Rob, my husband and I, we've been religious all of our lives. We do mission trips with this community church. I have never been in the home of another Christian. I don't even know where our preacher lives.
Oh, wow. That's sad. I mean, it's sad. But it also reminds us of the wisdom of God, because how often, especially in the New Testament, are Christians reminded to be hospitable? And I know it's easy to kind of take those verse parts. Well, that's not just about having people in your home. And I understand that. The word means love, you know, one who loves strangers. And that could be done in, you know, a restaurant. It could be done in, you know, city park or whatever. But when the early church met in the temple, where else did they meet? House to house.
Yes.
And it's one of those things, especially in a rural setting, as you said. I know in bigger cities, often people are more comfortable going to a restaurant or, you know, whatever, have a picnic out of the park or whatever. But in a rural setting, there is that feeling of, this feels like home. And I remember going to Grandma's house, or everybody going to Aunt Susie's house on Sunday, you know, Sunday dinner, and reminding them of that and showing them, we're not a perfect family, but we just have a home, and we're welcoming you into our home. We're willing to cook you a meal. Let's just talk. That opens more doors than I think people realize, especially in a rural setting.
Absolutely. And in fact, there's a couple of texts that come to my mind as you were speaking. One is what we sometimes call, as evangelists, God's 2020 plan for evangelism. Mm-hmm. And it's in Acts 20:20, and it's about Paul. And he said, I kept back nothing from you. He said, I wanted to say anything that was profitable, but I've showed it to you publicly and from house to house. Mm-hmm. It was common for people to go from home to home, and we've gotten away from that. And when you take the home out of evangelism, you're taking away one of God's biggest tools. It is a tool of evangelism to put someone in your home. When you feed someone and give them a dessert, it's a whole lot easier to open a Bible with them. Let me ask this question to our audience and to you, Adam. How many conversions do you know that take place at Cracker Barrel? How many conversions take place on Facebook? People love to talk about Jesus, but conversing about Jesus at Cracker Barrel or on Facebook, or maybe having one of those Facebook frenzies that go back and forth, yields very little fruit.
Right.
But when you put someone in your home and people become comfortable and they open their hearts, mm-hmm. that's when evangelism starts. I thought about Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. You know, when we talk about hospitality, it says, let brotherly love continue, but be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. When as preachers, when we teach that passage, you know hands are going to go up. They want to know about the angels.
Right.
They miss the point of the passage.
That's exactly right.
This passage is about being hospitable to people. And when you bring here's what we do. We bring someone into our home, and we just eat with them, we talk with them. And I'm looking for an opportunity. I'm looking for an open window where they mention something moral, something religious. When they do that, I know the opportunity has presented itself for a Bible study. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't look at them and say, would you like to study the Bible? I've learned to experience it. Sometimes that scares people. Mm-hmm. But here's what I do. I say, do you know what? That's an interesting statement you've made, and I have got something you have got to see. And I've got these Bible study booklets sitting back on my table. We walk over to the table. We open them up. We get around, and we start having a Bible study. We never call it a Bible study, but we're having a Bible study.
Right.
And I just want to share with the audience that we've been doing this, my wife and I, for about 20 years, and we have a 95% success rate of conversion with that.
Wow.
That means 95% of the time when they sit around our table, they become Christians. So I know this works. And when you look at the master evangelist Jesus, was he not a social person?
Absolutely.
Did people not like to be around him?
Amazingly so.
Yes.
Almost to the point you look at his, if you will, daily schedule, and you're worn out reading it.
Yes, yes. Yes, when you look at Jesus, he was on the way to the cross in Luke 18 and 19. He was focused on going to the cross, and there are two things that Jesus does as he's thinking about his crucifixion. He stops and heals a blind man, and then he stops and talks to a tax collector,
mm-hmm.
and he has a personal relationship with him. You know, when you look at Jesus and you see the crowds of people following him, you understand Luke 2:52 a little bit better. He increased with God and man. Jesus had favor with people. People liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early church, people liked the early church. We use Acts 2:47 to demonstrate that you're added to the church instead of joining a church.
Right, right.
Okay, praising God and having favor with all the people. The people liked the church. And I'm afraid in too many places, the people don't even know the church is there.
Right.
Or in some cases, they don't like the church.
Yeah, they wish it wasn't there.
Yes. And so we need to engage the community and let them know we're likable people. We're there to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're there to encourage them. And when that occurs, the Bible studies become so much easier. It's so much easier to get into the study because they've gained your confidence and your trust.
Right. You've given us so much to consider. One thing I want to circle back to, our podcast, you know, deals mostly with families. I want to just mention, just kind of circle back to something you mentioned there. This is something you and your wife, you know, have the people over. But you mentioned your whole family is involved in this.
Absolutely.
And I want people, especially who are listening, even if you have smaller children. I remember reading, I believe it was a book by Glenn and Cindy Cowley. I may not be right about that. But I remember reading a book by them, I think, where they talked about how when they would have a Bible study, even when their children were very small, One of the kids might set the table, but they always made sure the kids knew, we're doing this so that mommy or so that daddy can study the Bible with Sue or Bill or whoever it was.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, just built that little fire in them. And that's very important if you're going to have someone over, whether it's to have a Bible study or just to get to know them better, that your children have a part in it, your whole family has a part in it, to see that we all have a part in hospitality. This is not because I'm a preacher I'm doing this. No, I'm doing this because I'm a Christian. And because we want people to be invited into our home, to be encouraged by us, and hopefully we do have a Bible study. Even if we don't, though, they're encouraged because they've been around a Christian family, not just because they've been in the preacher's house.
Absolutely. You know, we've made it our practice that we want our children involved. And one of the things I've always told Jared and Hannah, I said, Jared and Hannah, when someone comes over, you're an evangelist too.
That's right.
And if they have children, would you make sure to take their children, take them upstairs, take them into your room, take them outside? Make sure they're not distracting the prospects or their mom and dad as we're studying. Hannah has become one of the best dessert makers I know of. She always makes the desserts for the prospects as they come over. And Nicole, she cooks a great meal. And I had one man. We did the first study. He didn't come to study, but he did a study. And after the study, I said, Jimmy, I said, would you like to come back for another study? He said, if I get some cooking like that, I'll come back anytime. So, you know, the food ought not to be the reason they obey the gospel. But, you know, the lack of hospitality is the reason people aren't.
Right.
Because it's the first impression.
Right.
They come into the door, and it's cold. They come into the door, and no one knows they're there. And if we are not extending hospitality in the congregation, in our homes, there are people who are not going to obey the gospel because the door is shut.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminded of Luke 10, you know, Martha and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of lessons, if we have a few minutes,
sure,
for us to look at in this passage. The Bible says that it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village and a certain woman named Mary received him into her house. So I'm going to give Mary credit. She opens her house. But there's something else about Mary that is kind of a negative. And the negative is in verse number 39 and 40. She had a sister called Mary, which sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. Now, Mary was concerned about the word, but Martha was concerned about the house. See, Martha was more concerned about serving than the servant. In fact, in verse 40, it says, Martha was distracted about much serving. And she came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, to help me. She had lost sight of the goal. The goal was to listen to Jesus. She was more concerned about the house. Now, I noticed, and ladies, if you're listening to this program, I'm pleading with you on behalf of husbands. We will never have people over to our home until you give us the green light.
That's right.
Okay? And I know that you're concerned about the silverware, the color of the carpet, and the walls. But if you're waiting on your husband to get that house perfect, it's never going to happen. We're just not going to get there for you.
Right.
So we're asking, can you open your home up? And we're going. And any good husband should be helping you. We should be helping you. And I want us to notice there's a point here in verse 41 that I want us to look at. Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful or troubled about a great many things. If you got your Bible, you want to circle many things. But look at verse 42. But one thing, circle that, is needful, and Mary hath chosen the good part. One thing that's important is Jesus. Let's not get distracted and stop evangelizing because our house isn't big enough. We don't think our silverware matches. Use plasticware if you need matching, you know, silverware. What I'm saying is that we need people in our homes, and we need not to be distracted by the serving and focus on the servant. And in a rural area, Adam, this is an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
because people still have that community, that sense of community. It's larger in a rural area. I'm not saying it's not in a city area. There is a belonging.
Mm-hmm.
But in a rural area, people love to come to people's houses. Mm-hmm. And truly, there's a leg up in personal evangelism. Where we live in Macon County, this is something that is when people ask, how do you have a congregation of 335 members in the middle of nowhere? Mm-hmm. This is how, mm-hmm. because of this kind of work.
Yeah, well, that's... Well, I love that, because that's an excuse so many people give. I would have somebody over my home for a Bible study or for anything else, for that matter, any kind of hospitality, but the house isn't perfect. Well, neither is anybody else's.
That's right.
And you know, there also is an advantage to people seeing that. As you said, it's not that we're going to have people over when the wife hasn't given the—I love the way you put that, given the green light. But people also, when we go with their houses, I don't notice the mess or the silverware wasn't exactly the same. I remember the conversation.
That's exactly
and
right.
And I remember they had us over and that they cared enough. And we need to get that into our mind. As you said, in a rural setting, that plays so well, if I can use that terminology, just that you had them over and had warm conversation, show that you cared, show you care about the kids. You're trying to get to know them. And that's a lost art.
It is.
It shouldn't even be a difficult art, because all it is sitting around a table talking.
You know, Adam, I'm going to assume that in our listening audience, there are people right now that are saying to themselves, I thought this was about, you know, evangelism. You're exactly right. Evangelism, this is one of the main things that help us be evangelistic.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, when I just started talking to churches about these seminars, I focused, I think, too much on the nuts and bolts. I was focusing too much on all the Bible passages that tell us we've got to evangelize. I don't believe that's the problem among God's people.
They can quote them.
Yes, we've been preaching them and quoting them. The problem is, a lot of times the one quoting them is not doing them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the people, they hear it, they know it, but they're not doing it. This seminar, I changed my whole approach about 5 years ago. How do you get there? How do you get into the study? How do you do the study? So this is more of a how-to seminar. And that's what we're doing this week of Polishing the Pulpit. It's exciting. People are stopping me all through the hall saying, wow, I want to tell you my story.
Yeah.
And I love to sit there and listen to that.
Sure.
And I'm getting emails and texts about people who've attended these seminars telling me, listen, last night we baptized somebody, mm-hmm. and we did what we learned in that seminar.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there's hope. We still have a million-plus members of the Lord's body in this country. We can turn things around.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. And that's true in every setting. You know, if it's a church of 20 people that meets, you know, in the middle of a cornfield, they can make a difference where they
yes.
are, because there's more than 20 people there.
Exactly right.
There are people around who need to hear the gospel, who need their families improved, who need morality changed, and so on and so forth, everywhere, no matter where people happen to be. Let me kind of start wrapping us up here a little bit and kind of throw out the softball question. We're going to link to the seminar, the videos and things. But before people get that in the mail, hopefully they're going to, you know, order that and get that and be encouraged. What's something that any family could do literally tonight when they hear this program? Maybe they're driving home from work as they're listening to this. What's something any family could do tonight to kind of set the mood, the tone that our family is going to begin to be evangelistic?
Well, the first thing we need to do is just resolve in our families that we're going to open our homes up. And let's say, as you're listening to this program, maybe you're a widow, a widower, or maybe you're older, or maybe you just don't feel like you have a home that can be used. Let me make this suggestion. Go to an elder, go to a preacher, go to somebody and say this: I'm ready to help. I'll cook the meal if you let me use your home.
Yep.
Go to an elder and say, I want to be involved in soul winning. If you invite him over, I'll clean up for you. I mean, we went to a preacher's home down in Bridgeport, and I noticed that he had invited a few family members over, and we were eating. Well, there was one lady who came, and it looked like to me she came just to clean and help cook. And I thought that was extraordinary.
Sure.
And I started to talk to him about this sister, and she has no family. She wanted to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can do those kind of things. And so I think a talk needs to start in the family with your children. We're going to start being soul winners. I recommend in our seminars, people use something called Back to the Bible. It's written by Bobby Bates. They're very simple. There's three booklets. Now, you might be using Fishers of Men, Open Bible Study. You might have another method. And if you're using that method, keep using it. But if you don't have a method right now, I want to recommend Back to the Bible by Bobby Bates. You can order it from Sister Wilma Bates. I'm sure we can get that information on the screen for you.
Sure.
And it's very simple. I know right now new converts using that approach to convert people and win people to Christ. And so you need to first open your home, then you've got to have a strategy. Jesus said in Matthew 10, you've got to be as wise as serpents and subtle as doves. When I used to hear that word serpent, I thought of the snake striking its prey. That is not us. What Jesus is referring to is that a serpent is strategic and a dove is soft. We need to be strategic people and soft people. And we can do that.
Sure. Rob, we appreciate that. Let me ask one more question,
sure.
just in a general way. I remember you saying this. You held a seminar for us when I was at Lebanon Road in Nashville. And I think I remember you saying this. Do you all still at Willett have public prayer for people that are being studied with?
That's something that we try to do. There are times when I don't do that for discrete purposes. You know,
right.
But when we can, what we do is I'll announce. I'll send an email to the church or announce that we're studying with somebody. As a church, let's study for this individual. And sometimes we announce their name.
Mm-hmm.
We say, this particular person we're studying with, would you be praying for them? Because evangelism is a family effort, but it is a congregational effort. And it encourages other people. One of the things I love to see at Willett is when other people are evangelizing. When I get a phone call and said, Rob, I've got this person, they're ready to be baptized. That thrills my heart to know that they're just not relying upon the preacher to do all the evangelism.
Sure. I just, like I said, that's one of those things I thought I remembered you saying several years ago.
Yes.
And I thought, just had people hear that this isn't something that has to be done over in the dark. You know,
right.
It needs to be both families,
yes.
your physical family and your congregational family. Rob, thank you so much for joining us on the program. This
my
has been so
Adam.
Encouraging. And again, we appreciate the Light Network. Sorry, Robert, I'll get your name right eventually, for letting us use their equipment here at Polishing the Pulpit. We hope this has encouraged your family. And again, in the show notes for this episode, we'll have links to World Video Bible School, to the seminar, the DVDs that Rob has mentioned, and we'll also try to find the link or information anyway to the Back to the Bible series, so you can check that out as well. We hope you'll join us again on the next episode of A Legacy of Faith. Thank you for joining us this week, and until next time, remember, your family can go to heaven. Just make sure you go there together.